Moncrief on News Talk.
You're listening to the Moncrief Show on News Talk. Joanna Fortune joins us once again for Parenting Afternoon. Joanna.
Afternoon, Sean.
Now, here's your first question. I would like to ask some advice in relation to my nearly four-year-old. She's due to have an operation to have eight teeth removed. I'm unsure of how to prepare her for this. She has been to the dentist on numerous occasions recently and has had no problem as long as she knows that they're going to take a look. My concern is that this time they will obviously need to prepare her for surgery, and I'm worried about when she comes around from her general anaesthetic and her mouth and face will be numb, and I don't want this to frighten her. I would like to talk to her and try to prepare her, but she is a very intelligent and determined child. My husband fears that we will have a hard time getting her to the hospital, which is a long trip as we're travelling from North Donegal, and thinks we should say nothing. I would love some advice or strategies that I could try in order to prepare her without terrifying her.
Oh, do you know, I sometimes think these kinds of experiences are more terrifying for us as parents, because we're so filled with anxiety about how it's going to go for our children. And actually, children will surprise you with how able they are for all of this. Now, that said, this is challenging. You know, I don't want to make light of it and say, oh, she'll think it's great fun. It's a lot. And it's a lot of kind of different noises, smells and shapes. And she's going to be, I'm guessing she's 4 years old. I imagine, I'm doing a lot of imagining out. They're going to try to see her early in the day. She might be traveling in your car in her pajamas. So I'm going to go with you on this and say that I generally prefer to prepare children for what's ahead rather than just spring it on them, get in the car and see where we land, because I think you could have a greater degree of resistance, because you'll get her there and she'll be in a state of anticipation. What is this place? What's happening? I'm not prepared. When it comes to a child of this age, and especially the bright ones, because, you know, it's almost more challenging, you really do need to be prepared to give them detail, but don't flood her with it. Take a tell, show, do approach. So you're going to tell her you're going to go to the dentist's room and they're going to help sort out all the teeth in your mouth. They're going to take some of them out, but you'll be asleep for the whole thing. Whatever it is, you're going to tell her what's happening. Then you're going to show her what you mean by that. Now, showing her is like playing it out. So you're going to maybe have a sketch, it's easy, pull one from the internet, of a mouth with teeth. You see all the teeth and the dentist looks at our teeth and makes sure everything is the way it is. So that's what's going to happen. And you might play it out by bringing the dolly, doing a little dental work on the dolly. Dolly's all happy afterwards. Tell, show, do. Break it down into those three steps. And you want to do that more than once. Repeat it in the same way. The other thing that can be helpful is to fashion a little kind of mask for the dolly that you're going to have the dolly wear, and take deep breaths in, because that's going to be part of what they'll ask her to do when she goes into the dental surgery for her anaesthetic. And that's often the piece that children are like, I don't want to put that on my face. What is that? Now, bear in mind that dentists do this all the time. The dental surgeon will absolutely come to you with, look, this helps and that helps and the other thing helps. So do reach out to them as well and see what they suggest you do. Other than that, I'm going to say that you should let her with you now. She's 4 years old, but pack a comfort pack, a little backpack. She can put a teddy of her choosing, her favorite book, maybe something that you have that plays music that she likes, you know, theme tunes from whatever little movie or thing that she likes to listen to. A movie, if you think that will help. You know, these are, you know, exceptional circumstances. I think normal rules might not apply. And if you think that would help her, let her pick her favorite TV show or movie and have a couple of episodes on standby for her. And, you know, make a big kind of this is exciting by buying new pajamas, new slippers, dressing gown, and talk about it helping her in positive terms. So when you put the little mask on the toy, what you might find helpful is to say, you know, taking these special deep breaths is going to help her to fly. And the mask is about learning to fly. To use a superhero analogy. But I just think if you tell her in simple words, let her ask you the questions, and then show her on a drawing or a sketch of teeth and then play it out, I think that'll really help.
Right, yeah, okay. The poor thing though, eight teeth.
Oh, I mean, look, it's a lot. And the question about, you know, her mouth being numb afterwards, you're right. And you don't know, because, you know, how she'll react coming out of anaesthetic. But I would say lots and lots of comfort, and talk about it in, again, as positive language as you can, that your mouth is just feeling tingly. And when the magic wears off, it'll be back to normal. So talk about it in those, because she's at that age where magical, omnipotent thinking that, you know, you had that magic air, and that when that wears off, your mouth will be back to its normal self and you can have all your fun eating and crunching and chewing. You know, you positive reframe it, but mind yourself as well, because I think it's a really big deal for parents.
Yeah, no, what would concern me is that also that, you know, when the numbness wears off, our mouth's going to be sore. Eight teeth is no joke at all.
Absolutely. And they'll probably, again, I'm imagining, advise you to have your Calpol and your Nurofen Plus on standby. But I would be saying you're going to just knuckle down for a good day and a half of sofa, soft blanket, snuggle time when you get her home.
I have a 9-year-old twin boys who are in fourth class in a small country school. One of my sons is extremely sensitive and a very gentle soul. He's struggling with maths and would have very poor concentration levels. I have discussed this with his teacher before lockdown. My kids are only back to school for 8 days and he has come home twice crying. The teacher is very strict and can be very cross with my son and it cannot take this. She gave out to him and told him he was way behind everyone in his maths revision. He's now in fourth class and has to do the work. I do not get on with this teacher anyway and I don't know how to deal with it as she does not like parents to have any say in any part of the school.
Oh, this is such a tricky one. You know, there's a few things in it. OK, your son is struggling with his relation to build a positive relationship with the teacher. But you also aren't actually that mad about her. I'm reading very clearly, you don't get on with her. You have some strong views about her. And I'm not saying those are wrong. I'm just saying you have them as well. So what you don't mention here is, because you've twins, you don't actually mention how your other son is experiencing this teacher. And I don't want to diminish your more sensitive son's experience, but it would be worth building what I'd call a full picture of the teacher. So because you have a second child, you can really do that yourself. Generally, I'd say talk to other parents now, not in a, you know, let's all gang up on the teacher way, but in a, look, how are you getting on? How's your child getting on? What have you found has worked or helped, or a parent who had a child with this teacher maybe last year, you know, that you could actually see, look, what could I do to help this? Or how have others experienced her? Because your child has their experience. It's not invalid, but other kids might experience her differently. So I just, you know, before we kind of demonize the teacher, let's build a full picture of her. I think that could help you. I also think, you know, when our children are struggling at all, but particularly like this, and coming home within 8 days, coming home twice crying, I mean, that is a lot for any parent to have to deal with, and any child. But when it happens, like, our protective instincts are really triggered when we see our child emotionally struggling, or that the teacher isn't understanding them or responding to them in the way that we know they need to be responded to. And I think that that's something just to be aware of. It can push you into fight or flight, and it can almost make you want to, that's it, I'm going into that school, I'm going to sort this out and tell this teacher what's what. And inadvertently, you can make it worse. I do think listen to your son, absolutely. Let him talk it out, let him cry it out, let him feel all out what's going on. Ask him then the very important question, is there something you would like me to do about this to change it? If he says no, that's okay. Respect that and hold back. But you want to talk to him about how strategies that he could do, what could he change, what could he do differently, what might help? Would it help if we spent extra time on your maths homework at home? Is there something we can do to change this at home? If it was to continue, or if he was to say to you, look, I do want you to do something, because you've listened, you've talked it out with those open-ended questions, stay really calm and look for a meeting with the teacher. You want to approach her calmly with solution focus. Look, he's struggling. Do you know, you might not be aware, but he's come home twice crying already. You know, I really would love to talk to you about ways that we can work together to help him settle in, make this easier for him. What do you think I could do? Here's what I find works at home for us. So you're gently giving those suggestions, but you're not saying, you're making my child cry, cut it out, because then you're into battle mode. Mm. If that doesn't work, and if you're saying, look, I've already done that, and this teacher I'm getting nowhere with, then consider a meeting with the teacher and the principal. And I don't want that to feel like I'm telling your boss on you, but just to say, look, I'm struggling to get to the bottom of this. I'd like us to think about ways that we can help my son to have a positive school year, and it's not happening right now. We've tried A and B, it's time for C. And do it that way. Do though, I think all of us, even listening to this, because I think it's quite triggering in general, just think back to having a teacher that you didn't like in school yourself. And you know, I can certainly bring one to mind straight away, and that from primary school. And, you know, how did that feel? What was it like to have to go to school and deal with that? Even if that teacher was to say, look, I never had a problem with you, if you perceived it and experienced it, you know, that gives you the opportunity to respond to him from an empathic place. But equally bring to mind all of the teachers you had who were just wonderful, who you loved to learn with, who you had really positive experiences with, and help him bring to mind the teachers that he has loved in school. So it's not school is the problem.
Yeah.
It's that there is a problem, and together you will find a solution to make this as positive a school year as it can be for him. Just learning to master tension arousing feelings is really important for children, and particularly this age group. So just hold back from that instinct to jump in and fix it, and just park your own kind of fix and rescue agenda and stick with him in what does he want you to do? How does he think you can best help him?
Yeah, plus he's also, you know, he's nine. He's been out of school for 6 months or so.
Yeah.
They're only just back, so it's probably all a bit stressful.
It's super, super stressful. And I think they all do. You're dead right. They do need time to adjust and settle. But, you know, the idea of a child coming home crying maths is just like, oh, my God, there's bigger issues for kids going on right now. So there's a practical solution to that one.
One could infer from this that the other brother seems to be getting on fine.
That was my inference as well. Yeah.
Would it be worth kind of gently trying to kind of poke him for a bit of, you know, information and see how he gets on with the teacher? And does he think his brother is maybe, you know, what's that dynamic there?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I wouldn't even make it about what do you think your brother's experience. I would say, you know, how do you find school and the teacher? And that's what I mean about building a full picture of the teacher, not just this picture. The challenge this parent has is their own picture of the teacher is quite aligned with this little boy. Mm-hmm. They don't like the teacher either. And that's actually quite difficult as well. So I definitely think ask your other son, be curious, not interrogating now, be curious about how he's finding school and what the teacher's like. And, you know, are there other kids who are experiencing the teacher in the same way? And again, that's not to invalidate this little boy's experience. It's just to help you to know the best way to approach it.
This being the parenting slot, we have to have gross question of the day. It's this. My 2-year-old daughter is picking at her face and does not seem bothered that she's causing it to bleed. It started mid-June when she had 2 spots in her cheek and hasn't stopped, even though there are no skin irritations or spots. It seems like it's habit forming. I don't know how to reverse it. I've tried putting a barrier on her face, a Aveeno or Vaseline, and keep her nails short. Thanks for any advice.
Yeah, I mean, exactly that, you know, using the Aveeno or the Vaseline, keeping the nails short, they're all really practical things to do. And because she's 2 years old, it's not like you can explain why she shouldn't pick her face with words. So distraction and redirection are your friend. It's like every time you see her do it, you want to call upon her to do something else to keep those little hands busy and otherwise occupied. A little bit of what I'd be doing with the face, because there might be just something she's quite enjoying. Our faces can be, especially when you're 2, you know, kind of squidgy and soft and nice to kind of play with, you know, and just poke around with. So start to use that a little bit in your play with her. Play pop cheeks, you know, you pop up your cheeks and, you know, it'd be easier to get her to pop yours. But, you know, bear in mind, you do not pop up your cheeks and invite a 2-year-old to whack you on the face, because they will. So what I mean, just very clearly, is hold her hands in yours and guide them to your pop cheeks and do it that way until you know she won't hit you in the face. Play beep honk. That means like when you touch her nose with your finger, it goes beep. Her chin goes honk, her earlobe might go ding-a-ling, you might go zip zoom, whatever little noises, quacks or meows all around the different parts of her face. And then do gentle touches. You can use a cotton ball or a feather and just do really gentle little touches all around her face, and particularly where she's been picking. So you're modeling gentle touch on her face for her and with her. I'd also increase her sensory play, though, because that is a little bit sensory seeking, that picking at her face. So make Play-Doh with her. And the reason I'd say make it, because at that age, they're so likely to eat it, at least you know it's safe. And you could also add in, you know, maybe some cocoa powder or, you know, some safe little scents, little oils to scent the dough. Herbs will do that as well. And she can pick pinch, roll, and get all of that instinct out in the dough. I think that could actually be really helpful. Also finger painting, but if you hate the idea of finger painting, and I know lots of people are like, no thanks, not doing it. But if you can tolerate it, brilliant. And if you can't, stick with the Play-Doh idea.
Right, we do have to take a commercial break. You are listening to the Moncrief Show on News Talk. Where after that, how to deal with ADHD. You are listening to the Moncrief Show on News Talk. Joanna Fortune is still with us. We did have a question about a 9-year-old. Now, one of twins who's in fourth class, one seems to be getting on fine there. The other one's has come home twice crying already because of an issue with maths. A lot of the texts are pretty much similar. Regarding the maths teacher, nip it in the bud. I was mocked by a teacher in front of a class for a few weeks until my dad got wind of it. He reassured that teacher it wouldn't be tolerated and the problem was solved. Someone else says, MW says, bringing back memories of when parents were terrified to approach bullying teachers. The result was always a disaster for the child. Joanna pointed out there, it's best to get all the information and then be a bit more diplomatic for the sake of the child. Also, as always, a question about an 8-year-old who has, or a 4-year-old, I should say, he wants to go in for dental surgery to have 8 teeth removed and how to prepare them in advance. Lots of texts on that. Some of them not that useful, like say nothing and apologise after isn't going to work. But this is a good one. My son had to have a partial circumcision when he was 2. Temple Street gave us a book which showed all the different kinds of people who work in the hospital, from the porters to the nurses to play therapists to surgeons. It talked about the different rooms we would travel through, from the reception to the ward to the operating theatre. When we got to the hospital, we were able to point out all the different places and people we were expecting to see. If the dentist don't have something like this, maybe you could draw something for her, even if it's just stick people. That's a brilliant idea.
That's a super idea, and it goes right into that tell, show, do approach, because you're building a picture in their mind of what they can anticipate. And then when they get there, it's like, oh yeah, there's that and there's that. So they have some degree of control over what's happening. So that's a great idea. I would definitely ask for the book or design one. Super.
My son has just been diagnosed with ADHD, the inattentive type. Is it possible to train or rewire your brain by doing short activities that require concentration and patience and increasing the time spent slowly?
Okay, so I'm not quite sure if this question is asking, is it possible to cure ADHD or to develop strategies around better managing those symptoms? So I'm going to go with the strategies to manage, because this isn't a cure situation. It's about really developing a part that he's not the kid with ADHD. He's a kid who happens to have ADHD, and it's a part of him, but not all of him. So right now, this is new information, and it's a lot for a parent and child to adjust to. So you might find some support with ADHDIreland.ie. So you might be able to go on, get some supports for yourself, see what's in your community with parent groups, things like that, or simply just some information gathering. Now, is it possible to use some strategies? Yes, but just manage your expectations. It's not like he's going to sit down and go, great, that's it, I have it. You have to build up tolerance, take a lot of time and be slow and steady with this. So there's a few things. I'm going to suggest that as a parent, you look at all of these yourself. If you are linked in with, and you must be if you've just got a diagnosis, either a CAMS team or your GP or a psychiatrist, whoever has given you the diagnosis, it would be no harm to run all of this by them and see what resources they're suggesting for your son's particular presentation. Because yes, you know, you could do something like CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy. You could do some kind of coaching. There are also parenting courses. Often, children who have a diagnosis like this and their families find that multi-model treatment, so a little bit of this with this with this, like a multidisciplinary approach, can be most effective, and it would be well worth linking in with your local CAMS, Child and Adolescent Mental Health Services team via your GP to see what's on offer there. They might even have some social groups and things like that that you could find really, really helpful. I'm not sure how old your son is, so I'm giving like really general kind of information. You also might find Michelle Garcia has some really nice social thinking tools, very practical. And before you commit to buying books, I think Michelle Garcia has some YouTube videos that show what she means by social thinking tools. And those can be really, really useful as well. Equally, the psychologist Tony Atwood does a lot of work in this area and has a number of webinars on YouTube. But also there's a book called ADHD Book Living Right Now, and it's by Dr. Martin Kutcher, K-U-T-S-C-H-E-R. And that book has been recommended to me by a number of families I've worked with who are also parenting with this diagnosis as part of their family. So I think read a bit, watch a bit, and reach out for local support services in your area. But go slow and steady with this, and you'll find what's going to work for him. Don't flood him with lots of tools at once. Start with something, see does it work, and if not, then change track.
Because I don't know, I'm maybe reading too much between the lines. It sounds like they just got this diagnosis, and this is a parent going, what can I do about this? Yeah.
Oh, and I get that, because we're wired to go into solution focus. I want to fix this. I want to make this easier and better for my child. And fantastic. He's lucky to have you, you know, that you're doing all of that work. But just be very selective rather than collective with the resources you gather, because you can end up saying, oh, I'll buy this book and that book and the other book. And all of a sudden you have a whole library of books, but you've no clear map through.
Somebody's texting in to say there's a great book called All Dogs Have ADHD, which explains ADHD to children in a great way. There you go.
Super. Yeah.
Worth checking out. I have a 3-year-old daughter and I'm due another baby in the new year. Just wanted some advice on how to prepare my daughter for it and try to resolve an ongoing difficulty we have prior to the new baby coming along. When we go out for a walk with my daughter, she chases ahead very fast. When we call her and tell her to stop, she often doesn't listen and continues on. She loves to go out on a little bike and can go very fast on it. There have been two occasions where we nearly lost her, and when I found her, she appeared amused and didn't seem to be frightened at all by the separation. If I try to, I insist on holding her hand, she becomes agitated and it just makes for a very unpleasant trip out. She appears to have pent-up energy that at times can seem kind of out of control or hard to contain. I wonder if how I'm reacting to this by appearing anxious when out together is perpetuating it also.
Well, look, your anxiety is a reaction to her impulsivity. So it might be, you know, exacerbating what's going on, but it's not causing it. So, you know, we can be very quick to blame ourselves. It's definitely not because of you. You have a fast-paced, impulsive little girl. That's what it is.
Yeah.
So there are two questions here. How do you prepare her for a sibling, and how do you stop her racing away from you and terrifying you when you're out? And I think one of the things, because you've got a fast-paced, busy little ball of energy on your hands, is ensure that you're getting, or she's getting, enough physical outdoor play activity every day, and enough for this little girl could be 3 hours of making sure that, you know, waves now, it's always waves of activity. So it's not like you have to have her out for 3 solid hours, but that she's getting out for a walk, she's getting out to jump and run, she's getting to do a little bit of kind of rough and tumble style play. And she's always going to need that. So you have to build that into your parenting. You could also consider, because obviously you can say, look, the rule when we're out is we hold hands, blah, blah, blah. But if you've got one and she thinks that you're holding her hand is actually restricting her rather than keeping her safe, she's just going to pull away from you even more. So consider one of those harness backpacks. I know some people have very strong views on them, but if you have a child who's a runner, these can be a huge reassurance and help. So you wear, you know, the armband bit up on your arm, and it does allow her move a little bit away from you, but she's wearing this little backpack that's keeping her close enough to you at the same time. And that can be actually reassuring for you, but also her. So you could say, look, we wear our backpack when we're in, you know, those busy built up areas involving crossing roads and places you don't want her to run away. And then wherever you're going, to the park or the playground or wherever it is, that she can run off in that safer space. And then she wears her backpack for coming home. If she's a child who loves to scoot on her way or bike on her way, you might want to consider we walk to where we're going and scoot once you get there, because otherwise you're going to be chasing that scooter down a hill or whatever it is, just to keep up with her. So just put a boundary and a rule in place. And if you are calm and consistent with that, it's not like she's going to high five you on day one and go, fantastic, that really makes me feel good. But she'll adapt. You know, her job is to resist you at first, and then she'll adapt once you say, oh no, that's not what we do. If you're not able to keep your backpack on, we have to go home. That's the way it works. So you hold it in and you keep yourself calm in that. I think I'd also want to practice some impulse control play with her. Now, she's 3 and they're impulsive by nature, but she seems especially so. So you might want to play red light, green light, and then you can use that language when you're outside as well. But play it first. Have her stand at one side of the room and she can run towards you or jump or hop or tiptoe. You decide how big the room is when you say green light, and she has to freeze when you say red light. And then she can go again when you say green, and she has to freeze when you say red. So she has to slow down that instinct to run towards you. You could do some games that involve mirroring. So she's going to copy everything you do, which is helping her to internalize taking her lead and her cue from you as her safe adult in charge. And you play those games daily so that she's beginning to internalize that. And then when you're out, you can say, hey, red light, freeze. And hopefully, through repeated experience, she begins to integrate that. In terms of preparing her for the baby coming along, you certainly want to tell her about it. It's really exciting and positive. You know, you don't need to give her too far notice, but you certainly want to give her kind of 3-4 months notice that it's happening, because she'll notice physical changes. Kids are very aware of things like that. Make it exciting. Let her help choose some bits for the baby. You know, model what's going to happen using a baby doll, and get a couple of books. There's endless books. Look, people will probably send in suggestions, but you can also look online. Books like, you know, There's a House Inside My Mummy, or You Were Here, or You Were the First, I think it is. You Were the First, not You Were Here First. You Were the First is a nice one that talks about how there might be a number two or even a number three one day, but you'll always be the first. Mm. And it's a nice way to explain that a baby's coming, but you're still special. So I think you could play it out like that. That would be really nice for her.
I'm guessing part of her concern here is that she doesn't want to be in a situation where in the new year, when the new baby comes along, that she's got the 3-year-old running away from her while she has the baby in the pushchair, because that'll be impossible.
Absolutely.
To control.
You might want to get one of those little balance boards that you can attach to the buggy so yeah. that she can stand on that while you push the buggy, so she is within your arms, but also feeling like she's having a little exciting scoot down the hill. Something like that might be worth it. But no, I'm also assuming that child, that like it must be, I need to nail this before I'm chasing her with a buggy. It's bad enough chasing her just myself. Also, you don't want to be chasing her when you're heavily pregnant. I think the harness backpack might be your friend.
Yeah, and someone's texting in to say, OMG, that child who has lots of energy could be my child. He's 2.5. lots of exclamation points, perhaps reflecting their own frustration as well. Joanna, thanks a million as ever. Joanna Fortune there. You are listening to the Moncrief Show on News Talk.
Moncrief on News Talk.